you see the name of Usamuddin. In all other books, five books, he mentions the name of Usamuddin actually, somehow or other. He actually creates pretexts and excuses in order to mention Usamuddin. So his main address is to him and through him to others, but never artificially he mentions God, his name, the name of the Prophet, and no one. And this applies to the first book as well. So the first poem, the first verse of the first book reads as follows. Listen to the reed, how it tells a tale, complaining of separations. Now, let me read you in Persian, of course. I mean, our Persian speaking people are definitely familiar with this. I don't think that you would ever encounter any Iranian, any Persian speaking person who doesn't know this particular verse, which I am going to read you, which is even more popular and more well-known, or better known, I would say, than some of the verses of Quran among the Persian-speaking people. Bishnu, as nature hekayat mikonat, as judaiha shekayat mikonat. But I am telling you that this is not the right, the correct wordings of Rumi. You know, Nicholson, who was editing Masnavi, he based his editions on some manuscripts that he got from, especially from Turkey. And this was the first verse of Masnavi in most manuscripts that he got. But when he was doing, during his work, when he was doing the, was editing the third book, he got a new manuscript, which was the most authentic of all. And in that one, actually, the reading of this verse was different. So he mentioned it in some of his end notes. But now his book actually is and this copy is the old one. Actually, it is always being printed like this, but the end notes, if you look at it, you will see the difference. My edition actually does not commit this mistake, and so there you will see the original wording. Now here you see that what Rumi says is listen to the reed, how it tells a tale, whereas the correct reading is this. Listen to this reed rather than to the reed. I mean, he actually refers to himself. There has been a lot of commentaries about who is the reed. And that was because of the incorrect readings of the book. But you see that he said that to this reed, everything, I mean, all those disputations disappear. Now you know, see, who is the reed. Actually, Rumi saw himself as a reed. I mean, in the lips of God, of course. And he was breathing into him and giving him his spirit, as I'm going to mention later. So, listen to this reed. It tells a tale. No, listen to this reed, complaining of separation. And it is telling you the tale of separation. So that is the virtually the original. Bishnu innei, chun shikayat mikonat. Anyway, I mean, whichever of the reading you take, whichever of the versions you take, the word complain is there, very prominent. So Rumi is complaining from the separation. He doesn't know, of course, separations, he says in Persian. Separations, all kinds of separations that he suffered from. He as a reed, he found himself as a reed. Somebody is breathing in it, blowing in it, and the sound and the voice is coming out from the reed. And that tells you the tales of separation, the complaints of the separation. Separation is, of course, one of the main themes of Rumi. And you know, and I told you the story of his separation. The separation was so sudden, so abrupt, and so intense that his whole life was immersed in, so to speak, complaining from separation. But one word has to be added to this, because without that, I mean, the story will be defective, will be, I would say, virtually untold. he never complained from anything. So this, ostensible reading or version of the poem should not mislead you. One should not be misled with the word complain. He never complained from anything. The version that I mentioned, listen to this read, which is complaining on the screen. That is actually in an interrogative mood. It is not in a descriptive mood, assertive mood. It doesn't say that it is complaining. It says, listen, do you think that it is complaining? That is the real meaning. Not only complain was not the business of Rumi, he never busied himself in complaining anything, including suppression. He never thanked anything. He was not grateful to anything either. And that also he mentions very clearly, very explicitly, that the mystics, the saints, the contemplatives, the people who are quite close to God, they neither complain nor thank. Now, this is a very strange position one to take, especially when you compare him with other mystics, with other poets. You see, when you go to Hafez, for example, you know him, another very, very great poet in Persian literature. So when he says that, I am at the same time both thanking my beloved and complaining him. So that is what he says. So he has got both. But Rumi tells us in some other verses in his Masnavi that he has neither this nor that. This stems from a position that a mystic takes, assumes in front of God. You know, complaining and thanking always belong to the bounties that you receive. If you receive a bounty, a mercy from your God, from your beloved, then you are grateful. You offer your thanks to him. Thank-giving, as we say. Now, if you do not receive what you expect from him, then you complain, okay? But all these two things, I mean complaining and thanking, they belong to the stage of the bounty, receiving it or not receiving it. But somebody who doesn't look at all at the bounty always is, dazed at the bounty giver, at the God, at the beloved. He never thanks and never complains for anything. You understand what I mean? So it's one step further. It is much deeper, much higher. So you thank the Lord because of his bounties. Maybe you complain him if you are not a very correct slave of him. You may complain him because he doesn't give you what you expect. He doesn't fulfill your expectations. But always beyond the state and the state of bounties. But what about somebody who doesn't look at the bounties at all? He doesn't expect to see whatsoever from the merciful. He is only looking at the merciful, at the Lord himself, and does not come down from him. So there is no place for thanking or complaining. Therefore, when you see, for example, the word complain in Rumi, you have to be absolutely careful about what he means about it. So there are verses in Masnavi where he says very, very clearly that yes, apparently, ostensibly, I am complaining, but I am not complaining. I am a storyteller. I am just describing the state of affairs. من ز جان شکایت می کنم. من نیم شاکی. روایت می کنم. Is it possible that I could complain from the soul of the soul? That is absolutely impossible. I am a storyteller. I am just describing the state of affairs. من نیم شاکی. روایت می کنم. Therefore, when you see here that, of course, Nicholson translated, and he must translate it as a complaint, but it is not a real complaint. It is not a real complaint. It is a kind of using the words that the audience are more familiar with, and putting the words perhaps in the mouth of the audience. And that is, but in order to get the real meaning, you have to go through the whole work. Now, the second verse here reads as follows, saying, i.e. the reed, ever since I was parted from the reed bed, my lament hath caused man and woman to mourn. So, this is the second. Let us look at the reed itself, the symbolism of reed, which is a very curious one. Rumi not only uses this symbolism here, in Divan also you will see the same. Make a multitude of man to a piece of reed. And it tells you a lot. We have got many figurative actually expressions about the lover or the human being in their relationship with God, with the Lord. There are a lot of these similitudes. But in the case of reed, I think you get perhaps the most important ones. At the same time, Rumi actually conveys to us, offers us a multitude of meanings when he uses the word reed in with regard to him himself. For he is a piece of reed, empty, void. He hasn't got anything from him himself. He needs someone in order to come and to blow into the reed, in order to fill it in. Without that somebody, without that someone, he stays void and empty and without anything. So that means the intense, actually, need of human beings, especially the mystic contemplatives, when they experience their inner sense, their inner essence, that they are absolutely dependent on somebody else. Without that dependence, they are not. They are absolutely void of existence, of reality, everything. You see, same time it gives you the meaning and the experience that a mystic actually understands and feels when he looks at himself. He is like a reed. And this is, again, the idea of humility. Arrogance means to feel you are full of everything, full of sense, full of meaning, full of life, full of knowledge. But when you feel yourself absolutely empty from sense, from meaning, from life, and all these must come from somewhere else to you, that is the meaning of the reed here. And then, in the case of reed, to blow into the reed has got some sense of the breathe, you know, breathe of life. This breath of life, of course, is a Quranic, is a spiritual, is a religious symbolism. You have got it in Christianity, you got it in Islam, and in all mysticisms. Very, very important, very significant indeed, that the breath of God must come into us in order to make us full of life, full of meaning, full of even existence. Without him, we do not have our existence. We do not exist. We will perish altogether. And thirdly, and perhaps more importantly, a piece of reed is only a form. The content comes from elsewhere. But the form actually forms the content here. You see, I read you last time that the window determines how much light enters the house. The reed determines how much breath actually enters the reed and enters your ear through the reed. You see, so we are forms, okay, but we have got our own function. We determine, we condition, so to speak, the bounties of God, what he offers us. It is the form that conditions the content. It is the window that determines the amount of light that you can get inside the room, inside the house. So all these meanings actually must come to your mind. When you read the first verse of Masnavi, he sees himself as a piece of reed. Somebody is there behind the reed, fluting, blowing, breathing into the reed, filling it in with his breath, with his life, and the read at the same time is conditioning the breath of the blower. Now, what he says, I mean, exactly means this, that what you hear from me is not from me, it's from the someone who is blowing into me. So that's not mine. Mine is only the conditioning, the restrictions. So the limitations are mine. His is, I mean, boundless. His bounty, his breathing is boundless, virtually, because limitations are mine, if there are defects. And this really, at the same time, tells you, and we will hear it, I mean, I will tell you later on the basis of what Rumi said, this actually example, this similitude, this allegory, this figurative expression, in a sense, can even solve for you the problem of evil. You see, the problem of evil in all theology means, does God actually produce evil things in the world? Now, according to mystics like Rumi, now, evils are always due to limitations, and limitations are ours. His bounty, His mercy, His working, everything are boundless. So that is exactly what he says. Therefore, here you have got a very important claim behind all he is telling us here, and that is this, that I, as a piece of reed, I am not actually a storyteller. The storyteller is someone else. I am only an instrument. I am only, he is using me an instrument. So the story is being told by him through me to you. And according to my capacities, my potentialities, my actualities, and my limitations. So that is virtually what he tells us. This is the symbolism of reed. And then in the second verse, again, there are different versions of it. According to Nicholson, I was from the reed bed. My lament hath caused man and woman to moan. Yes, I mean the Persian version reads as follows. از نیستان تا مرا ببریده اند، از نفیرم مرد و زن نالیده اند. This is what Nicholson has translated. Here. My lament has caused man and woman to mourn. But the correct version is not like this. The correct version reads like this. از نیستان تا مرا ببریده اند، در نفیرم مرد و زن نالیده اند. Meaning that it is not because of my lament that man and woman has mourned. In my lament, man and woman has mourned. There is a world of difference between the two. It means that my lament is the lamenting of all human beings. I am a reed, not only in the lips of God, but in the lips of all human beings. So therefore, what I am saying actually is the saying of all humanity. I have not caused them to lament. My lament is their lament. They are lamenting through me. That is actually what he says. So the correct version is goes like this. So these two, I mean, then of course it goes on... says a lot about love, about separation, about the unsatiable thirst of the lover, about the symbolism of fish, which we will have more about it later on. Fish looms large, very prominent in the whole Rumi. First of all, because he was familiar with Christian culture and literature, and as you know, fish is a symbol of Christ, so he uses the fish symbolism in his work quite frequently. Secondly, because fish has got nothing, no belonging actually, no dress, no bed in order to sleep, and nothing. And that is the best example of a real mystic, a real Sufi, because he must have no belonging whatsoever. So the fish is the best example. So then he mentions the fish and many other things here. Now, in order to see some sort of the free associations that sometimes he go through in the work, suffice us to read some of the poems here. You know, the first book of Masnavi actually begins with a lengthy story about a king and a handmaiden with whom he fell in love. And so the story goes on, and the handmaiden actually fell ill, and so he asked for some physicians to come and to treat her. And well, all right, I better not to tell you the whole story, because that will be maybe the subject of our next session. But in this story, just actually by way of explaining some point, he mentions the sun, you see, sun and moon and so on. But since his mentor, his master, his sheikh was Shamsuddin, you remember, Shamsuddin means the sun of religion. So suddenly, from this sun, actually he moves on to the other sun, to Shamsuddin. And then actually the whole thing actually changes here. He virtually forgets about the story, and he enters a completely new field, new territory of mentioning Shamsuddin, showing and impressions of him and his feelings towards him, and then of course saying some very important points about Shamsuddin. Since his name has come to my lips, just the word son, since his name has come to my lips, it behooves me to set forth some hints of his bounty. At this moment my soul has plucked my skirt. He has caught the perfume of Joseph's vest. In nafas jan damanam bartaft ast. Buye pirahan Yusuf yaft ast. Means Husamuddin. Actually he was asking him and pressing him in order to say something about Shamsuddin, about his master. For the sake of our years of companionship, recount one of those sweet ecstasies, that earth and heaven may laugh with joy, that intellect and spirit and eye may increase a hundredfold. I said, Rumi says, I said to Husamuddin, do not lay task on me, for I have passed away from myself. I am in a state of fana. My apprehensions are blunted, and I know not how to praise. Everything that is said by one who has not returned to consciousness, if he constrains himself or boastfully exaggerates, is unseemly. How should I? Not a vein of mine is sensible. How should I describe that friend who hath no peer, has no friend? The description of this severance and this heart's blood do thou at present leave over till another time. And so he said, leave it for another time. Please do not request me. Please do not ask me. And then actually Shamsuddin presses him. Insist. He's so adamant. He said, feed me, I mean Husamuddin, for I am hungry. And make haste, for time is a cutting sword. This is another teaching of Sufis, of course, that the time is a cutting sword. I mean, you are the child of the present. You should not postpone things to some other time. So this is what Husamuddin actually put to him, that tell me now, do not postpone it, do not tell me that, leave it for some another time. Okay, feed me, for I'm hungry, and make haste, for time is a cutting sword. The Sufi is the son of the present time. Sufi ibn al-Waqt bashad ay rafi. Ibn al-Waqt means the child of the present. Since Sufi is detached from everything, he is detached from time as well. So this is the secret behind it. He is detached from time. He doesn't live in time. Every time for him is present. He doesn't know the past or the future. So all this he says in some other places. He doesn't know the past or the future. Though, as if he is meta-historical. He's living in a state in which there is no time. So that's what he says, that he's a child of the present. O comrade, it is not the rule of the way to say tomorrow. It is not the rule of the way to say tomorrow. Are not thou indeed a Sufi then? That which is in hand is reduced to naught by postponing the payment. I said to him, it is better that the secrets of the friend should be disguised. Now you see what he thinks about Shamsuddin and disclosing the secrets between him and Shams. I said to him, to Husam, it is better that the secrets of the friend should be disguised. Do thou hearken in the contents of the tale. It is better that the lover's secret should be told in the talk of others. This is actually the whole policy of Rumi here. Let me read you again. It is better that the lover's secret should be told in the talk of others. He doesn't disclose secrets directly. When he tells us a story in the talk of others, there and then he discloses the secrets. And that is the whole policy he's following in Masnavi. He brings up, he mentions this of the story, and through storytelling actually he tells us his secrets. Secrets of the divine, secrets of Shamsuddin and whatever. he said again, tell it forth openly and nakedly and without unfaithfulness. Do not put me off. I said, if he should become naked in thy vision, neither wilt thou remain, nor thy bosom, nor thy waist. Ask thy wish, but ask with measure. A blade of a straw will not support the mountain. If the sun, by whom this world is illuminated, should approach a little nearer, all will be burned. So that is the last word of Rumi to Husamuddin. You see, first of all, the style of association that he uses, and secondly, when actually something comes to his mind, he just doesn't mention it in passing. He takes it very seriously and goes on talking about it in full, and then leaves this particular bit and moves on to the story itself in order to finish it, in order to complete it, and so on. Now the time is over. I wanted to say something about the, how he ended the first book and began the second, but we postpone it to the next session. According to Rumi, measure thy wishes and do not expect too much. Thank you very much.
'Cause at this time, if anyone has any questions, feel free to ask.
فارسی بشنو این نی چون شکایت می کند از جدائی ها حکایت می کند. That's you will see it here in this edition.
Yes.
Oh yes, oh yes, at least you can find it in Widener library, but oh yes, I mean it's now I think the 7th printing of it, so yeah, you can find it or you can order it from Iran. I'm not sure if you can find it here in any bookseller. I'm sure that in California, in Los Angeles, probably that they have it and they sell it. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, thank you for bringing up this question, especially this business of the cloud of unknowing. Presently, I am actually translating the book Cloud of Unknowing, and maybe you have got that book as well in mind. And the book is full of course, very interesting mystical points. And the thing that I am doing is this, that I am actually making a comparison, or sometimes a